ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Human beings are remarkable creatures. Across time, we've created tools, small, clever inventions that quietly shape our daily lives. They work so seamlessly, we barely notice them anymore. But behind each one lies a story of ingenuity, curiosity, and design. Welcome to Extraordinary Everyday. I'm Anthony Burke. There's a breezy feeling of freedom and flight when you're cruising along on a bicycle. For many kids, it's their first taste of real independence and a chance to explore the world. Some people love to ride to work or use the bike as their main form of exercise. So, how did a bicycle become such an everyday part of many people's lives? And how has the design changed over time? Charlie Farran is a bicycle enthusiast and the former president of Bicycle Network, Australia's biggest bike riding organisation. She's also the custodian of a collection of more than 200 antique bicycles. It's been called one of the finest collections of vintage bikes in the world. And she's the co-author of Bicycling Through Time. Charlie, thank you for joining me.
You're most welcome.
We've got a bit of a history to plot out here. Let's sort of start at the beginning. When were the earliest bicycles developed and marketed?
Look, the very first, what we would call a bicycle, was 1817. And there was this aristocratic guy in Germany, Baron von Drey. And he was the keeper of the estate of the Grand Duke of Baden. So that meant that he, in our terms, was a sort of landscape gardener, I suppose. And he would have been using a horse to tend the estate. And so he was an inveterate inventor. And he came up with the idea of a sort of wooden beam and two wheels. But the essence of the bicycle was that this, it's a machine, I think you'd say, had steering. Now, there were no pedals. You had to scoot it along the ground as if you were ice skating. And many people now would know that little kids get around on what we call balance bikes.
Yes, yes.
Exactly the same thing, only much bigger, was this Draisienne, the hobby horse, the pedestrian accelerator. So this was all happening in Germany. He took it off to Paris to exhibit it. As with all crazes, it spread. It spread to London, and there was a coachmaker there called Dennis Johnson, and he reckoned he could improve on the design, which he did. So there were hobby horses in Europe and in Britain. And Dennis Johnson in London was a good marketing, he was a good salesman. And it was a phenomenal craze. It was a craze available only to wealthy people, to the elite, to the aristocrats. And it was a craze that died out virtually within 2 years.
The first one was made out of wood, but I'm wondering, what were the wheels made out of?
Well, they would have been like carriage wheels. A wooden rim, wooden spokes, and a metal band probably around the outside, just so that the wood didn't abrade.
We know bikes like the penny farthing, for example. What were some of the early types of bicycle that then emerged out of that very first bike?
So nothing happened for about 40 years. It's extraordinary.
Wow.
But it's thought that somebody took one of these hobby horses into a workshop in Paris owned by the Michaud brothers. And they decided that if they put cranks onto that front hub in the front wheel, they wouldn't have to put their feet on the ground. They could, what we would now call, pedal along. So that was the massive change, and that happened in the early 1860s, about 1863. So suddenly you've got a machine that you can pedal. It was still absolutely rudimentary. And the problem with this was that when you attach cranks to the front hub, one rotation of the pedals sends you the circumference of the wheel in forward motion. And if those wheels are small, you just don't go very far. If you think about little kids on their tricycles, their poor legs are spinning around and they're hardly going anywhere. So the riders at the time said, well, excuse me, I want to go further and faster. Could you just make that front wheel a little bit bigger? So that's how we started to get the front wheel increasing in size. And it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's how it ended up with what we would call a high wheeler or a penny farthing. The next really important person that you need to remember is a guy called James Starley, known as the father of cycling. And one of his great coups was to develop a differential. And he had a tricycle called a salvo. Now, you need a differential if you want to ride a tricycle and go round corners. And we still use that mechanism in cars now, so that one wheel turns more than the other when you go round a corner. Penny farthings are really inherently a bit hazardous because your weight is over the front wheel. It's a little bit like riding a unicycle. If you hit a bump, you might go over the handlebars. If you go too fast down a hill, those cranks start moving so quickly you can't keep your feet on them. So there were all sorts of things tried to make that penny farthing safer. And the best of the ideas was the geared front hub. Now, I'm not very good at describing gears. It's a sort of sun and planet mechanism, an epicyclic, where you can bring the size of the front wheel down, but it still gives you a gear ratio of a bigger wheel.
Now, what about this gentleman called John Boyd Dunlop? What did he do?
Ah, yes. Oh, Dunlop. What a winner. What an absolute winner he was.
What's his story?
He was a Scottish vet. And again, another one of these extraordinary people who were curious. He developed what we now all know about, which is the Dunlop tyre, the air-filled tyre. When he was living in Belfast, he developed this air-filled tyre and realised that, wow, it's so much more comfortable. That tyre will roll further than a solid rubber tyre. So this is 1888. A little bit before that, so we had James Starley, if you remember, you know, the salvo, the wonder, you know, penny farthings. He had a nephew, John Starley, and it's down to him that we now have a bicycle with a diamond frame, two equal size wheels, and a chain that drives the back wheel.
So he kind of took the DNA and reimagined the DNA of the bike.
Absolutely. Now, that would talk about a great leap forward. That was stunning. He was still at that point, he was about mid-1880s. He was still needing to use solid rubber tyres. He didn't have any gearing on this Rover Safety, as it was called. But it was the essence of what we know now as a bicycle.
I wonder how early bicycles were game changers for women in general. Did they change the situation to allow women to get out in public more, or to change the gender balance in any particular way?
Oh, they surely did. They allowed women the pleasure of personal transport, whereas previously they might have had to go to the stables and get the stable hand to saddle up their horses. But more than that, it changed the dress style, because they realised really early on that these corsets and voluminous skirts constrained the activity of riding a bike. So we had somebody in around the 1850s in America. There was a woman called Amelia Bloomer, and she was experimenting with a split skirt, bloomers as we know them now, and it was taken up by many, many other female riders. They had all sorts of ingenious ways to still look elegant, but also be able to ride a bicycle with a split skirt or bloomers.
The change that's gone in bicycles to today, in the late 20th and early 21st century, seems like a major leap forward. Is it that much of a leap forward, or if we just had a couple of new materials and a bit more of a fancier look to our bikes?
Yes, I think all the good ideas came in the last 40 years of the 1800s, to be honest, and nothing much has changed. Well, there are a few things that are different. You could say maybe quick-release wheels. Gearing has improved dramatically. Derailleurs. I think the first derailleur was used in the Tour de France in about 1937. But lots of things were around, you know, 120, 130 years ago. BMX riding, 1910. Shaft drives, late 1800s. Mountain bikes, maybe they're a newer type of design, but certainly sprung frames were around. Carbon fibre, I'll give you that one.
All right, so a new material enters the fray.
Yep. Hydraulic disc brakes, they're definitely a refinement. Look, not even electric bikes are new and different, because in, I think, 1897, there was a patent lodged for an electric bike in Boston, America.
That is incredible to think about.
Isn't it?
So I have to ask you then one last question. Electric scooters, are they the new miracle of personal transport, or are they the devil's work?
What a provocative question. If they knock you over, they're the devil's work. But I do think they're a variation on personal transport that allows people to move around without using the dreaded motor car.
Charlie, it's been such an absolute delight talking to you, and particularly to hear about this wonderful history of the bike. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Anthony. And I hope everybody gets their bike out, dusts it off and goes for a ride.
Charlie Farran, former president of Bicycle Network. For more episodes like this, head to ABC Listen and follow the show. Just search Anthony Burke's By Design.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.